Hi, it's Paul Bates with GreatDad.com, and I'm here with my weekly discussions with dads with different points of view. And I've got an interesting guest today, Christian Yordanoff, who is an expert on mostly on gut health, but has a lot of effects on how gut health affects children and the link with autism and how nutrition and testing and the science behind it can really help better understand how to take care of these kids. So welcome, Christian.
Thanks so much, Paul. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I hope I kind of did a good digest of what you do, because it seems like you've done a lot of research on a lot of areas relating to not just autism. You've got a book on autism called Autism, the Autism Wellbeing Plan, where you talk about the science and diet and how you can do lab testing, but you also talk about gut health and its relationship to people of all ages. And since I do work with men and aging, mostly on finding meaning during aging, but part of that is health. I'm interested to talk to you.
Yeah, so. It's going to be fun.
So let's first of all talk about the book, because let's focus on the kids first and how you came to understand there's this link between how you treat autism with the different things you describe in the book.
Yeah, so as I was saying to you earlier, in 2018, someone in my family, a child, was suspected of being on the spectrum. So I quickly dove into the research on autism and very quickly saw that, like many things that we're being told by the mainstream that are genetic, there's a lot more to it than just that sort of simple blanket statement. And I quickly, by looking through the research, I saw that a lot of these kids are suffering from a multitude of health problems, including gut problems, which is a big piece of the puzzle, but also heavy metal, chemical toxicity, just poor nutritional status, poor antioxidant status. So I decided to write the book in 2019 because I really felt like nobody's helping these parents, or very few practitioners out there were actively helping the parents out. And they were just really getting kind of their wings clipped by when going to the doctor, being told it's genetic, you know, it's for life, there's nothing you can do about it. Maybe some of the symptoms can be treated. So, and that's really not the case. The earlier you start doing things, like I discuss in the book with the child, you know, lab testing to uncover the health challenges and opportunities to resolve some of those biochemical imbalances or physiological issues, like in the gut, for example, or with nutrient status, the sooner you start doing these things and improving the diet, adding supplements and reducing toxic exposures, the sooner you can get those things out of the child's way and they can start developing towards their full potential. And, you know, some of the things that, because since I wrote the book, I've also become a father, I realized that a lot of those things that apply to a family with an autistic child, we should really be applying to our families in general. The toxic exposures, the improving the diet, you know, the light hygiene in the evening. That's a big one nowadays. The light hygiene in the morning. So a lot of us are stuck in between four walls from early morning, and that's really not compatible with how our bodies developed evolutionarily. So I learned a lot of things, and you know, I believe I can share a lot that we can, you know, all benefit from.
So I'm interested, first of all, because you don't come from a research background. You're not a PhD scientist. You're not a doctor. But you take a deep dive into the science, and I know we kind of get into a lot of murky area where there's a lot of conspiracy theories. The whole, you know, do vaccines cause autism? We're not talking about that, I assume. We're talking more about what are the difference between genetic traits, input to the body, gut health, all the other things that can affect your health, not just for autism.
I mean, look, it's a very one-dimensional blanket statement to say one thing causes autism or any condition. You know, even heart disease. Like we were, for decades, we're told cholesterol bad, cholesterol heart disease, you know, or saturated fat bad. It's so one-dimensional. So you cannot ever say it's vaccines. You cannot say it's heavy metals. Some kids, you know, you test them and they don't have any toxic metals, right? But what I found through my research and through my clinical work, because I'm also a clinician, you know, I help families with their kids, not just with autism, but with other health problems. I work with adults as well. What I found is invariably, at least with my smallish sample sizes, the gut is pretty much invariably perturbed and not just with autistic children, but with anybody that has a health problem, even if it is completely unrelated to like a gut issue, right? Let's say, for example, a lot of fatigue, brain fog, things like that. Whenever we get the opportunity to test the person with like stool testing, organic acids testing, invariably there's some type of gut problem involved. And that is because, and this relates back to autism, the gut and the immune system are very tightly linked or interlinked. We're talking something like 60 to 70% of the immune cells, all of the immune cells in the body are co-located around the gut. And the fact that the gut and the nervous system are super tightly linked, basically you can consider the gut as part of the nervous system. You can imagine how a problem with the gut, and that could be because of antibiotics, it could be because of toxic exposure, poor diet, pathogenic organisms, a problem with the gut will perturb or imbalance the immune system, and that will have neurological manifestations in some way, shape, or form, because again the nervous system is so tightly linked there. So I think the conspiracy theories aside, you know, we all have our opinions on vaccines and all these other things and toxic metals. I honestly believe the biggest culprits are the just in general how toxic the environment has become, how unhealthy mothers are relative to what, you know, their mothers or their grandmothers were at the time they have the kids, and how bereft of nutrition the food supply has gotten to, and how many, you know, pesticides and herbicides and all these other chemicals are permeating the food supply. I believe those are the things really contributing to all of these childhood conditions, and in many ways to the all the other conditions that we're seeing increase or skyrocket even.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could argue with all that wide variety of things. I mean, we know things as simple as things like lead being in the food, which has come along, or tiny particles of plastic, pesticides. Obviously, who wants to ingest pesticides, and who wants to give them to a baby? All those things. Are we talking about inflammation of the gut? Is that, I mean, I know there's a lot of discussion right now about inflammation and how inflammation can lead to cancers. Are we talking about some other part of gut health?
Inflammation is invariably going to be a problem with almost all conditions, right? Be it heart disease, cancer, all the childhood conditions. So inflammation, again, when you perturb the immune system, you're going to get inflammation as a part of that process. So a simple scenario, let's say you're eating some food with a lot of maybe emulsifiers or maybe some other toxins, chemicals. If they damage your gut lining, that process of damage creates inflammation. Or if there's a pathogen that is in the gut, when the immune system attacks it, it does so through inflammatory processes. So absolutely, inflammation is a big issue in most health conditions. And we can talk more broadly for autism, because you also focus on, you know, the dads themselves. And I think we should focus on our kids, but we have to fill our own cup, as they say. Right, we have to be healthy. And then when you're healthy, you can, you know, you can keep your kids and your family in a better shape. So inflammation is something we most certainly want to ameliorate as much as possible as we age. Some ways to do that would be to just stop doing things that are inflammatory in nature. So the biggest one, I'll give people this tip if they haven't gotten the memo. I know a lot of people are waking up to it, but the biggest one to begin with is the polyunsaturated fats. So all the things with omega-6, right? So canola, corn oil, soybean oil, all the things, safflower oil, all of these things, and all the foods that they're in, these are highly inflammatory, for the simple reason that, excuse me, the omega-6 fats, some of them are literal precursors to inflammatory mediators in the body. So, you know, omega-6, certain fats like linoleic acid can be turned into arachidonic acid. And then arachidonic acid is a substrate to make prostaglandins, eicosanoids, leukotrienes. These are literal inflammatory molecules, mediators of inflammation. So the more of these seed oils we eat through takeout, restaurant food, and processed food, those are the three big culprits. The more of these we eat, the more of a chance there is for our body to create inflammation. So that's a, if you want, I'll pause there. And in case you have some questions so far.
Well, yeah, because I've just seen a lot of tweets recently, you know, in the last month, suddenly like everybody's talking about seed oils and how they're just evil. And I really couldn't tell whether this is just the latest, like the world is evil kind of discussion or whether this is new. I spent a lot of years of my career working at Unilever, and we were marketing salad oils, and quite often we were saying polyunsaturated fats, that was the best way to go. So yes. It's obviously, this is a total flip of that conversation, since it was saturated fats at that time that we were so worried about. So why is this suddenly popped on the zeitgeist?
It's not sudden, but the thing is, I've kind of been reading a little bit about the history of it, because I want to include it in my next book, a part of this history. But basically, around the 1910 or 1911, I think it was, Procter & Gamble came out with Crisco, which it was like a vegetable fat shortening. So like this hydrogenated butter alternative. And it took them about 4 years of solid marketing to sort of get homes to accept it. But then the First World War really did them a favor, because a lot of the butter and lard had to be exported for the soldiers and stuff like that. So that really, these seed oils really started permeating the food supply then. And then around, I believe, 1940. So the American Heart Association was created around 1925, I believe was the year. And around 1940, guess who gave them a bunch of money to expand their operations? Procter & Gamble. Okay, so no conflict of interest there. Now they're selling all these Crisco and other vegetable and seed oil products. Surely the American Heart Association is going to have no conflict of interest there. Anyway, 10 years later, we start having the cholesterol hypothesis, the saturated hypothesis. And there's been plenty of researchers along the way that were questioning, you know, are these seed oils heart healthy? These polyunsaturated fats, are they heart healthy? They were largely ignored or silenced, or they didn't get funding to, you know, further their research. And so with the information has been out there, if you start searching in PubMed, you will actually see the published studies that corroborate the narrative that there were. So for example, in 1971, they published one paper where they compared the, you know, saturated fat eaters to polyunsaturated fat eaters. And it was like, they showed that a lot more of the saturated fat eaters died, but they never really publicly said that the mortality between the two groups of the study was equal, roundabout equal. They never said that 31 people on the polyunsaturated fat arm died of cancer. So it's very easy to sort of use fudge the numbers, quote unquote, along the way to shape public opinion. And, you know, the public, I guess they respond easily to, like, this is the one thing you need to, you know, low fat in the 80s. Yeah. Or now it's sugar is the big culprit, right? So I think some researchers have known, it's just these things gather a lot of momentum. And it's very difficult to change this monolith of all the science, because you have a few potentially flawed studies that keep getting cited and repeatedly cited. And then you have a million, one of these studies has close to a million citations in the literature. And it's very difficult to then go against the grain and say, you know, all of these people that cited this study, all of this research is wrong. So I think that's one of the reasons why we're creating a critical mass of people waking up, I suppose, to the dangers of these seed oils.
Well, interesting. I'll need to dig in more on that myself to understand it better. So what?
If you want a good book, and it's also available in audiobook, Nina Tyscholtz, The Big Fat Surprise is what the book is called. She goes into the whole story of this, and it's actually quite an interesting listen or read.
Yeah. Okay.
I see you write books.
As a dad of a 2-year-old, what kind of, I mean, we're talking about metals, we're talking about seed oils, we're talking about plastics, cleanliness of the water. I mean, there's so many different aspects here, and it's really hard to keep your kids safe. I mean, they're going to be exposed to, our kids never got a juice box until they got to grade school. And then suddenly, you know, kindergarten, they're like handing out these juice box. They're like, well, you know, we had done such a great job. But you're constantly trying to monitor. How are you thinking about trying to keep your child as toxin free as
Paul, it's not easy. I'll tell you, like a lot of people might think I'm orthorexic or like have some type of disorder, because knowing what I know, I'm terrified for these kids out there. So pretty much everything she eats, my daughter eats, is organic. Since she was born, I had a shower filter. So we had to draw her baths from the kitchen. So I installed a shower filter in line in the kitchen, and I was battling with leaks and all the sorts of nonsense for months just so she could have chlorine free bath water. So that was super important. I mean, having HEPA air filters in all the rooms she's in, that's important for me, because a lot of the PBDEs, so the polybrominated diphenyl ethers, which are flame retardants, the phthalates and the plasticizers, things like that, a lot of these things that kind of are coming off of plastics, they tend to be carried around by household dust. So you really want to make sure the household dust situation is kept under wraps with, you know, these high quality HEPA air purifiers. So this is the kind of stuff, like when we leave the house, I know it's a little bit crazy sounding, but I always bring my own reverse osmosis water. So I have glass bottles and I bring those with me. Let's say we're going to the zoo. I'll never just like buy a plastic bottle of water and give it to her. I want to make sure I'm bringing something like organic goat's milk, stuff like that. So it's incredibly important. And another thing is to support. So the way the body detoxifies things, when you understand how it does that, you understand how to support the body. So how it does it is via producing energy and with certain nutrients, so amino acids, certain vitamins and minerals. So you need to make sure that you or your children are well nourished. That means enough calories energy wise and enough nutrients. So one easy way, my shortcut, is Nature's Multivitamin. So organic chicken liver is what I can find here, but in the States you can easily find organic beef liver. So organic beef liver, organic chicken liver, 2-3 times a week is what my whole family eats. It's just a really good way to cover all nutritional bases and fill in any gaps that the diet may have introduced. You know, if you're eating a bit too much grain, or let's say you're eating too much dairy, you might have issues with absorbing certain minerals like iron, zinc, so on. Or, you know, if you're eating too much meat, you might be not getting enough copper from the diet because they antagonize each other. So liver is a really good way to sort of, it's like nature's multivitamin. So I really like to, I also tell all my clients, you have to eat more liver. Yeah.
I bet they love that.
Oh yeah. Not many, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's better. That's, I think that's a lot more of a European thing than it is an American thing.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the differences in the quality standards the cleanliness standards, the filtering standards of Europe versus the United States? I think a lot of people in the United States think like Europe is really repressive, and certainly the EU goes overboard in some cases. But in a lot of cases, what I see is that the EU is, because of their regulations, is protecting a lot of the rest of the world from the worst impulses of capitalism in, you know, not allowing bad things to get in our food.
I think looking in terms of the legislature, there's more consumer protection in Europe in terms of the additives in the food supply. These certified organic labeling, I would trust it more in Europe than I would in the USA. I have to say, because most of my clients are in the US, I have to say I have a lot of empathy for folks in the USA, because, man, like, just the quality of the food supply has really deteriorated. On the other hand, because the country is so massive and such an economic powerhouse still, despite what, you know, we're being told, there's a lot of really amazing smaller scale farmers doing regenerative agriculture. So you can get a lot of really high quality food that was hopefully grown out of, you know, zones where there may be contamination from non-organic farming and agriculture. So there's a lot of really awesome companies. Like I was getting interviewed an hour ago, and I was saying, if you're in the USA, a company called Butcher Box, you can get grass-fed meat delivered to your door. Right. And Paleo Valley, they do organic, like beef jerky and snacks and bars and stuff. No, you know it's organic, and you know it's grass-fed. You can get this problem sorted, because, man, like, it, on the other hand, just to kind of move off, the bigger problem is that, again, the seed oils permeating the food supply, the amount of reliance on processed foods and restaurants and takeouts, I think that is a big problem for people. And I really think that is driving the obesity, the diabetes, the all of the heart disease, all of those conditions. They're being driven by this, I guess at this point, it's a need for convenience, because the lifestyle is so hectic, especially in the big cities. It's so stressful that people have basically in a couple of generations unlearned these really important things like sitting down, slowing down, eating at home and just relaxing, and maybe even growing your own food. We've kind of unlearned that in two generations, in Europe included.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know it's getting worse in Europe. Europe is... In France, for example, you'd be shocked that McDonald's, how popular McDonald's is in France. Whereas, yeah, you know, a generation ago, that would have been just anathema. Mm-hmm. It's just a crazy thing. So when you look at, maybe we can talk about what ways you can detox if you think that, you know, you want to pursue this more. I guess getting rid of processed foods, very important, mm-hmm. trying to go for organics. What other ways what would you recommend, like starting today, if you wanted to really start detoxing? I assume it's not like going on a fast.
Oh, God, geez, you know what? That's the last thing I'd recommend. The last thing. And I'll quickly tell you why. There's many reasons why fasting is a bad idea in today's world for most people. But the biggest one, right, is so in your fatty tissues, you have a lot of persistent organic pollutants. These are lipophilic, or with an affinity for fat, so fat-loving toxins. And these include all the things that got banned, you know, up to the 1970s. So the, you know, chlordane and DDT and the organochlorine mm-hmm. pesticides. These are, as the name suggests, persistent organic pollutants, because they have a very long half-life. They don't biodegrade very easily. And they bioaccumulate in the food chain. So us being apex predators, allegedly, we're getting a lot of this from the food supply. So, you know, you eat tuna fish. Well, tuna fish is probably not the worst culprit. In terms of heavy metals, it's not great, but it's the fatty animals at close to the top of the food chain that we eat that accumulate a lot of these persistent organic pollutants. So basically meat, dairy, and, you know, fatty fish will have a lot of it, again, because it accumulates in the fats. So if you start fasting, you start melting fat, you know, through lipolysis, it starts getting to the bloodstream. So a lot of these toxins, they start circulating, and they can end up literally in your organs and your brain. So because this is part of the research for my book, there's been a lot of health problems reported on by, you know, researchers when they do like an 8-week weight loss program. And so last thing you want to do is fasting, right? So if you want to start detoxing better, like we already discussed the first, if it's a three-legged stool, the first leg of the stool is reducing toxic exposure. Personal care products is another big one. I wanted to crowbar that in there. Then the second one, so the first couple of things are dietary. You want to eat enough protein, because the amino acids in protein, certain ones like glycine and cysteine, are used to create the antioxidant enzymes in the cells that are used to detoxify compounds, right? So eating enough protein is important. Eating enough carbohydrates is also important. So most people should probably at least get a couple hundred grams of carbs a day. If you're bigger or more active, probably more, 250, 300, up to 300. For most people should be a good ballpark figure. The reason for this is you need, like I said earlier, you need nutrients, but you also need energy in order to do all of these things in the body. So if you're doing, let's say, low carb keto, or you're dieting down or whatever, the body starts to prioritize the most important things, like, you know, the heart, the vital organs, the brain, and a lot of things that are not necessary for immediate survival start to get deprioritize like fertility, higher cognitive function, higher thought, joy, altruism, and a lot of nice to haves in the body, like whatever else. So enough calories in terms of carbs, enough protein, and then you may want to add certain amino acids as supplements and certain minerals. So usually zinc and magnesium are the first two minerals I start with most clients. They're very important in many things in the body, including the immune system, energy production, detoxification. And then the amino acids I usually start people on would be something like glycine, which we don't get enough of. If you don't eat, quote unquote, nose to tail, you don't get a lot of collagen in the diet. And collagen is where glycine is. So collagen is 40% of bone, right? So if you don't eat bone broth or drink bone broth, if you don't eat cartilaginous tissue, if you don't eat skin, which most of us don't nowadays, you're not going to get much glycine. So adding the amino acid glycine is probably a really good first step. It also is shown to help with sleep. It's also good for the skin because it spares your own collagen. It's also good for the bones long-term, in a long-term perspective, because your body will not rob as much of your collagen from your bones when it needs glycine for more important functions like fighting off viruses, pathogens, or detoxifying harmful chemicals and metals. So that's a good start. Other amino acids, taurine can be useful, N-acetylcysteine can also be useful. But glycine is a good one to start with. And a B vitamin complex is also good here to throw in because, again, the backdrop of all processes in the body is in the context of producing sufficient energy. So when you add B vitamins, you're giving your cells the necessary sub cofactors to create the energy needed for all these other processes.
So this is really interesting because luckily my insurance did for me covered a full nutritional panel where they did a blood test and a urine test. And I don't think there was a stool test, but it was very comprehensive. Part I did at home, part I had to go into a lab for. And that corroborates with some of the things, what you said. Definitely the B vitamins, the magnesium. I'm on like five huge pills of magnesium every day, as well as D3. I've heard in the literature, taurine, glycine, very important. So I assume when you do work with your clients, you're doing that same type of panel. And when the results come back and you can see the levels of what people are lower than maybe they should be or whatever, is vitamins the solution, like off-the-shelf vitamins, or is it changing your diet?
I think it's both. Most of the people that come to me generally are in a fairly low state, like a lot of dysfunction generally, for multiple years. So you can't claw yourself out of that hole with just diet, unfortunately. And I personally am not of the opinion that nowadays a good diet is sufficient because for the reasons we already covered, right? If you, this is the analogy I like to give sometimes. Imagine your body's dietary requirements today for optimal function is 2000 calories, right? And you eating those 2000 calories, all the vitamins, all the minerals, everything that you need. Now, take that person in this hypothetical situation, put them here in the modern world where they're getting dozens of tiny but cumulative toxic exposures every day. And let's say it costs you about 1% of your daily energy, so about 20 calories, to detoxify all of these things, you know, touching the receipt with all the BPA on it, being in traffic, you know, plastic things with bisphenol S and all the other bisphenols that they replace BPA with, even though they're just as toxic, if not more so. And, you know, pesticides on the food, all the dozens of things. Now, I was being very generous when saying 1% of your energy will take to, you know, to detoxify all of these things. But multiply that 1% over a year or 5 or 10 years. And you see where I'm coming at. Because every day you're actually digging yourself into a hole, slightly bigger hole. It's very small at first. And when you're 20, 30, or even 40, you might not feel it. But then as the hole becomes bigger, certain things in the body, because it deprioritizes certain other things, certain things might start to creak, quote unquote, sleep, libido, God knows what else, gut function, brain fog, some things that can come up. So you're in a hole that you cannot claw yourself out with that diet. So you either have to increase more nutrients from, increase the nutrition from the diet substantially, but you only have a certain capacity of what you can eat in a day. You can't eat double the amount of calories. Most people won't be able to do that sustainably. So adding nutrients is through supplements is, I believe, really required if we want to shortcut that health restoration process.
Okay. Well, one last question before we close up is on the hormones. I know, you know, a lot of, there were a lot of hormones in milk, in dairy products. I guess it comes from, originally the hormones were injected into the animals. Is that something that you are worried about, or is that a made up thing, like going for non-hormone, non?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I'm not, it's hard to say. It's hard to say when you buy a piece of meat or a yogurt or milk that's conventionally grown, it's hard to say how much of the hormones that the animals were injected with you're actually getting in that food. But for all intents and purposes, I am strictly avoiding all of those things, right? So I never buy non-organic. I will never buy non-organic. I'd rather do without and figure out something else to eat. And one other thing I'll say is, if you're in that position where there is no organic dairy alternative or meat alternative, your best bet is, like, for the reasons I outlined earlier about these fat-loving, lipophilic, persistent organic pollutants, is buy skim or fat-free yogurt or milk if you're in a pinch, if it's not, if you can't find organic, and buy lean red meat. I think that is one way to reduce a lot of the toxins that would accumulate in the fat, right? But if you can afford it, if you can find it, I would most certainly, first of all, I would never let my child have any of those things non-organic. And I would just, for my whole family, I'd rather do without, find another food source for the time being until I can find the quality products, but never go for the conventional stuff.
Yeah, it is a challenge. I mean, one part is availability, and certainly when you go out of the house, you don't know if things are, that you're being served in a restaurant are organic or processed, for that matter.
You know they aren't. In a restaurant, you know they aren't. You know they're the cheapest things they could get.
Right, right. Yeah, you see that big truck in the United States at Sysco, and it pulls that right up, and it's all been made, you know, a year ago, and there it is on your plate. But, and there is a financial cost to this that a lot of people can't afford. I mean, we're talking about maybe a 15% upcharge for organic versus non-organic. So my heart goes out to all the families there who are struggling already to try to go to organic. But you're constantly, as a dad, weighing all these different things. Had a client, I mean, you probably don't, because they wouldn't pay you unless you do pro bono work. But if you had a client who was on, you know, on a budget, where would you say to make the effort first? Where's the best return on investment for the health and safety of your family?
I've actually done quite a bit of pro bono work, including
Thank you.
Yeah, and I've done some pro bono work with families in Africa and India as well. And it just makes you appreciate how spoiled we are in the West, right?
Yeah.
And many of us don't even realize this. So with those folks, we just try to prioritize. When it comes to the kids, we have to prioritize things like I would rather do away with the fruits to begin with. So a lot of the non-organic, thin-skinned summer fruits and berries. So strawberries, blueberries, peaches, nectarines, apples, all of these things with a thin skin that a bug can easily get into and enjoy that succulence. These things are very heavily sprayed with pesticides. So if you go to the EWG.org's website,
Environmental Working Group,
search for EWG Clean 15 and Dirty Dozen, all the Dirty Dozen ones, I would stay away. If I can't afford them, I wouldn't buy them. If I can't afford them organic, I just wouldn't buy them. And the clean 15 are things like things with a thick skin, tubers, something like a root in the ground, carrots, onions, garlic, avocado, watermelon. So those things. So we'd focus on the clean 15 type of vegetables and fruits.
Yeah.
And then, like, for example, when it's rice, when it's rice is what the family is eating, a simple trick you do to get a lot of the arsenic out of the rice is you soak it in water. You pour the water out and then you use new water, or you cook it in a lot of water. As it's cooking, at one point you throw that water out and replace it with water. So a lot of that rice or a lot of the arsenic goes out with the water. So we just try to kind of do things like that. And with children, because they eat so little in terms of volume, we just have to focus on what's the most nutrition we can pack in the least number of bites. And that would be things like, you know, a little bit of meat if they're not vegetarian. I've also, like, you know, in India, religion prevents them from eating meat and stuff. So, but, mm-hmm. you know, a bit of yogurt has all the macronutrients. Butter is very calorically dense and an important source of saturated fat. A little bit of meat. And then, you know, honey, things like that. So adding nutrient-dense things rather than, you know, a grain that will fill you up, but is, you know, mostly carbohydrates, maybe some anti-nutrients even. So we just try to focus as much as possible on the nutrient dense things, which, you know, one pound tub of yogurt, a child could eat that over three meals, especially when they're smaller. So a little bit goes a long way. So that's kind of some of the ways we like to tackle that problem.
Wow. Well, this has really been a very information dense conversation. I hope we can, in the summary that we'll put together, we can pull some of the main ideas out of here, because there's a lot of things in there. I guess I really encourage dads to not just take the food supply for granted and do a little bit of research, because it is something that you can control, like choosing organic. And I love the tip on the berries, because sometimes the berries, you know, going from regular to organic is another 50 cents or 75 yeah. cents
or more.
But in yeah. that case, it's worth it versus yeah. like a banana where the thin is pretty thick and maybe there isn't that much of a relationship. We never store things in plastic. We never cook things in plastic. I know that's a big source of microplastic particles. There are all kinds of little things you can do. And once they become a habit, it doesn't feel like it's a real, you know, a real hard task. But, you know, every dad in the modern world, I think, needs to look at this, because we're not talking about the food supply of 75 years ago, which was relatively pure. So I like to end with three questions. One, you've got you're a dad of a two-year-old daughter. What lessons have you learned through your process of, maybe it's nutritionally related, about being a better dad because you are a dad?
I've learned so many lessons that
they're good teachers, the little ones.
They're amazing teachers. I've learned that I have a lot more, much more resourceful than I give myself credit for at times.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That coaching, we say you're naturally creative, resourceful, and whole. You've got all the skills within you if you recognize them. Okay. Lovely. Second one is, do you have a mantra that you've used to stay present or to stop yourself from any kind of negative behaviors when in relationship to your kids that you use?
Actually, I learned this one recently from somebody I interviewed on one of my podcasts. And when times are tough, when you're kind of sick, tired, hungry, or something like that, just take care of basic needs. And now it's like an inside joke with my wife. If you know, my daughter's having a meltdown or the house is a mess and we're just trying to get like some dinner ready or get her bathed, and something just, or someone starts complaining about something, it's like we just say, just take care of basic needs. Just take care of basic needs. That seems to help just get you through the day, sleep, and then wake up the next day refreshed and you're ready to whatever, clean the house or do that project, whatever that was.
I love that, because quite often, I mean, a source of marital problems is that you're fighting over something relatively stupid when, you know, the baby has a cold and, you know, you're tired from work and everything else. Like you say, take care of basic needs, get through the day, move on. There'll be always time to clean the counter, whatever it is that's driving you both crazy. And then the third one, would you have maybe, and again, maybe it is nutrition related, is do you have a weekly challenge for dads this week that they could just keep an eye on, you know, one thing and keep that front and center to try to be either more present or be better at feeding them?
I think because I can see how much work we still have how much work we have cut out for us in terms of educating everybody of the how to survive and thrive in this sort of modern world with its modern challenges of unprecedented levels of stress and unprecedented levels of toxic exposure. I think I'll challenge folks listening is, you know, start wrapping, if you haven't already, that is, start wrapping your head around this. And like, there's literally dozens of small little low-hanging fruit, tiny little exposures that are accumulating for every person in your household daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, every decade. And these things multiply. So find one thing, whether it's every day or every week, find one thing that you can improve. Be it, just go on Amazon now and type in shower filter, spend $50 now, get that shower filter ordered. You install it in 5 minutes. If you don't have a reverse osmosis system, next week, $200, spend that on a reverse osmosis system. Or the week after, get a HEPA air purifier for your child's room, then get one for your bedroom, one for the main living space. Swap out one food that you eat regularly, let's say yogurt. If your yogurt isn't grass-fed, organic, and your child eats that every day and you eat that every second day, but that's one regular thing you can now improve. Do that. Or if you buy chicken twice a week, see, can you get organic chicken instead of this chicken? You know, so see what you can do every week to slowly wean yourself off the current, I guess, the trappings of the modern world. You know, if all your food you're storing is in plastic containers, maybe after a few weeks, you want to replace those with glass. Maybe you want to, instead of taking your plastic bottle to the gym with water, maybe you want to spend $2 on a glass one that you can reuse. It's more eco, it's healthier in the long term. So these little things, really, over the course of a few months to a year, you'll be like, after a few months, you might even say, I could start coaching people on this. I got this, you know? So it's amazing how quickly positive change compounds, not just negative things. So that's what we have to sort of get, those first few quick wins, those low-hanging fruit, and then with that momentum, use that momentum and motivation to really go for the bigger things.
Yeah, I love that. Not falling into complacency that it's all messed up anyway, and what can I do? You can do certain things. You can take small steps. And as you say, if you keep on taking small steps, eventually you get to a point where you're making a really quantum difference in the quality of quality of your kids and your family's life. It's really been interesting conversation. Thank you very much for joining us again. You've got a website, ChristianYordanoff.com, which we'll put in the show notes so people can find it. You have two podcasts, one called the Children's Health Podcast and Connecting Minds. And you've got the book, which is called The Autism Wellbeing Plan, and then you've got another book coming up. So you're very busy.
Yeah, Paul, thank you so much. This was a pleasure talking to you, my friend.
Okay, great. So again, paulbanniswithgreatdad.com. Make sure to like and subscribe. As always, I have a course on gratitude that I like to pitch at least once during the podcast. You can find that at greatdad.com/gratitude. And for listeners, our faithful listeners, we'll give that to you for $1 just by entering the code podcast1. So until next time, hold your kids close and keep being a great dad. Remember, great dads make great kids. See you.